All right. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. 12th of September, 2025. This is Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. We're going to be talking about the Charlie Kirk shooting and the alleged shooter who is now in custody. And I do want to mention a few things about Charlie Kirk, who seems to have been almost universally loved across the planet. I mean, obviously not by the hard left, but by most people who knew him and met him. I met him once. I think we were on a panel together in St. Louis, and I gave a speech at a conference he was giving a speech at, watched him give his speech. And he had this really touching and wonderful, endearing quality to him. This optimism, this hope, this passion, this believe the best in people that I suppose I can only envy in a way. And he also had a patience, which is a virtue that I would not say I'm excessively infused with, but he had a kind of patience and a courage that was really second to none in the public square and public space. I think I saw him get angry once, and you know, that's fair. There's nothing virtuous about a complete lack of anger. And so he worked very hard at what he did. An absolute prodigy. Like, let's just be honest. I mean, an absolutely brilliant young man. Started his TPUSA, I think, at the age of 18, and had been speaking for quite a long time at Tea Party gatherings before that. And so he was brilliant at organizing, brilliant at fundraising, brilliant at promotion. And I mean that in a very positive way. Brilliant at debating. He wrote like 5 books. He got married. He had 2 kids. Ran a popular podcast and was just an absolute powerhouse. And he basically said, the left can do a lot of things better than me, but they cannot outwork me. And I think he absolutely proved that with what he was doing and what he was up to. An absolute force of nature. And this is from Dave Rubin, who said that Charlie Kirk once introduced him, even though Charlie Kirk had, you know, terrible back pain, which is not super unusual, of course, for people who have a great height. I think he was 6'5 or something like that. And he had back pain, but was still willing to and able to do all of this stuff. I wouldn't say if he had a photographic memory or something like that, but he had I'm great with memorizing principles and I'm great with coming up with analogies, but he had a really specific and brilliant brain when it came to names, places, details, Bible verses, and data. He was just a data gatherer that was really, really quite impressive. I'm not that great without the PowerPoints. So I find that impressive. Even the story of how he met his wife, I think her name is Erica, was sweet and touching. And there's actually these really nice messages that Candace Owens has published, messages, text messages back and forth with Charlie, with them plotting about how to get Erica to marry Charlie. But they met, as far as I understand it, I think they met at an airport. He got her number, and then he later invited her to meet him because he wanted to give her a job. And after a couple of hours of meeting with her, he said, I'm not going to give you a job. You can't have a job. But why not? I thought we were getting along. Well, because I want to date you, and I can't date you if I'm your boss. That is a nice, nice story, isn't it? That's a beautiful, beautiful story. And my heart absolutely goes out to her. My gosh, I mean, it's a Dostoevsky quote I published on X today, which was, those who love deeply are condemned in a way to never love again. And that is pretty horrible to see and pretty horrible to process. He was such a singular figure that she's not going to find another person like him. I mean, to just be honest. And my heart just goes out to her. You know, she's really right at the edge of better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. And, you know, my heart just goes out to her. What an appalling thing to see. And, of course, to have it videoed and broadcast and available until the end of time was just, it's really one of the most appalling things. You know, in the past, of course, because I view Charlie Kirk as a victim of an enemy combatant. And at least, though, Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, you got a medal back, you got a letter and so on. And you could go and you could do a grave site visit, but even if you couldn't find it, that's the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It's quite another thing to know that that murder is now going to be carved into the bits and atoms of the universe from here to eternity, and the execution. It is absolutely beyond appalling. So, you know, my heart goes out to the family and to the children, because he was a positive, benevolent, patient, positive, and engaging soul, you know, that was snuffed out. You know, you think of the amount of work that he had to put into to become who he was. The amount of reading, the amount of thinking. He said that he read, was aiming to read 100 books a year. It's like a book every 3-point-something days. And that's incredible, right? It's incredible, particularly as a father and running his giant organization and affecting politics and being a husband. It's and all that travel. It is amazing. He was an absolute workhorse of near indefatigability. And that, again, don't underestimate the power of just brute hard work when it comes to moving an agenda forward. It seems, to me, it is almost absolutely for certain that he would have been vice president 4 to 8 years, probably 8 years, president 8 to 12 years. That seems to me almost for certain. So this almost is a prevention of a post-Trump renaissance that was cut off. It's hard to know who could step into his shoes. It's hard to know who can pick up where he left off. I don't think it's going to be Ben Shapiro, although I think that's the rumor. But it is a absolutely brutal and horrifying situation. And the public spectacle of it all, I don't think is an accident. I think it's there to, it's a message. It is a warning. And, you know, everybody who believes what Charlie believes has seen not just the brutality of the execution, the to me, terrorist execution. They've not just seen that brutality, which is going to give you some serious freaking pause, but also they know that there are millions and millions of fellow citizens who are cheering on and approving and baying in bloodthirsty, horrifying werewolf ways the slaughter of a positive, wholesome, innocent, optimistic, brilliant family man who was executed. Well, why was he executed? I do want to get to that. I have some thoughts about that. But he was moderate. He seems extremist to people who live in the leftist bubble. And for those of you who are not, for those of you who are on the left, you don't know because it's in the daycares, it's in the primary schools, it's in junior high schools, it's in high schools, university, all the way through to post-grad. If you look at the faculty of these propaganda mills, these brain disassembly factories, you look at the faculty, you've got 90, 95%, 99% absolute leftists, and not moderate leftists in general. I would say that they're hard leftists. There are thousands and thousands of outright Marxists working in American higher academia. It is an absolute shitestorm of relentless, hateful propaganda that is going on. So if you're in that or you're part of that, when was the last time you saw something foundationally that wasn't mocking or you're a terrorist right wing that was put forward on the mainstream media or movies, television shows, you name it, right? So if you're on the left, this is just like your physics. And it's incomprehensible how anyone could have a different opinion, because everyone around you is an NPC copy-paste of propagandized hatred towards all things Christian, free market, individual, voluntarist, and virtuous, frankly. So it's incomprehensible to you because you're surrounded by everyone who agrees with you, and therefore disagreement feels like an absolute offense to morality and reality. Everyone around you who claims to be good all believes exactly the same things, to varying degrees, but not that much variance. If you look at the map of diversity on the left, there's almost no diversity of thought. On the right, there is greater diversity of thought, considerable diversity of thought. The left is a monomania of cult-like requirements for absolute conformity. And the left is brutal towards anyone who deviates. I mean, I remember back in the election time, when Trump was recorded by, was it Billy Bush, with his, you know, when you're famous, they let you grab them by the pussy and so on. Like, this is so shocking to people, like you've never heard of groupies, right? And I remember at the time saying to the left, this is the end of the road. Trump can't possibly survive this. But Trump took ownership for it. He apologized for it. He said he was wrong to say. He hates that he said it and so on. And on the left, there's no path to redemption. This is why they're so violent. There's no, you have to have a path to redemption. We all make mistakes. And Stephen King, the horror novelist, and not even the novelist of horror, he's just a novelist who's horrifying as a human being, was tweeting out that Charlie Kirk advocated for the stoning of homosexuals. Ooh, the language bubbling up in my inner. See, this is why I'm no Charlie Kirk. Just fine. We need all kinds. But that seemed perfectly reasonable to Stephen King. You know, obviously a very brilliant writer and a very intelligent man. And he apologized, but I assume out of fear of legal action from the estate, because that's wildly defamatory. But, and of course not, I mean, go ask Dave Rubin, right, who was friends with Charlie Kirk. But you're in an echo chamber to the point where any difference of opinion strikes you as absolutely incomprehensible. Like, to me, it's incomprehensible that people believe in the flat earth. Okay. It's incomprehensible to me that there are people who think the world is 6,000 years old. I mean, I'm not offended by it. I'd like to debate, and I've actually debated with a flat earth guy. It was actually a pretty popular show. You can find it at fdrpodcasts.com. But I'm around people who accept that the world is older than 6,000 years and that it is not flat, right? I mean, technically it's a slightly flattened sphere, but you know what I'm talking about, right? So I'm just around people. I'm sure there are people out there. I mean, I know that there are people out there who believe in past lives or some cool thing where they're a pharaoh, never that they're a smallpox-faced milkmaid named Gertrude. But there are people who believe lots of wild stuff. It's not part of my life. I accept there are beliefs out there. They just seem kind of crazy to me, which is fine. I'm sure my beliefs and my arguments seem crazy to other people. But those on the right are exposed to leftist ideas all the time, relentlessly, from every single conceivable corner. And I mean, do you remember the panic when Elon Musk took over X? And leftists were exposed because it wasn't so siloed anymore. Leftists were exposed to opposing arguments. Ah, you got to flee to blue sky. Run, run. Alien life forms, viruses of opposing ideas are going to take me down. They freak out. And they've done this study a number of times where it's a sort of theory of mind study, which is, can you play the devil's advocate for your position, like for something that you oppose? Like, I wrote a book where I make a very pro-spanking argument, though I'm very much against spanking. So can you do it? And people on the right can argue leftist positions. People on the left cannot argue rightist positions. They can't conceive of them. They can't understand them, which means they don't have any empathy. So you can empathize with people, which means you understand where they're coming from. Doesn't mean you sympathize with everything, but to empathize is to simply say, I get where someone's coming from. I don't agree, but I understand where they're coming from. So people on the left do not have empathy for the people on the right, which means they don't really have empathy for the people on the left. They're just conformists, and they're basically just playing to an audience of people who think exactly the same. And all they do is focus on consensus and being cheered on by their fellow travelers to hell, not because of any particular empathy or caring or understanding. So when Charlie Kirk comes to a campus, this is leftists coming out to see literal Hitler or fascist or, you know, whatever it is, right? And they see a reasonable guy who's asking questions, who's curious, who's respectful, who's decent, and who's patient. That is tough. It is really tough when you think you're in heaven, to wake up to the possibility that you are in fact in hell. That is really, really tough for people. And most people would shy away from that confrontation. If the lie is big enough, this is an old Nazi thing, right? If the lie is big enough, people are afraid to question it because then that questions their whole reality. And, you know, this, could we be the bad guys? Well, people on the left, I think, have shown exactly what they think of that. And not everyone, but most, a lot, let's just say a significant number of people on the left are cheering this on and saying he brought it on himself because he was controversial and he was divisive, which is, of course, circular, right? You view someone as controversial and divisive for making arguments you don't like. And then you can attack them for being controversial and divisive, but those are the labels that you've attached to them. And the left has a constant series of labels that they attach to people, which justifies being violent towards them. I posted a whole list of them on X today. I'm sure you can go and dig them up. But it is a free evil. We'll just give you labels that you can attach to people, which dehumanizes them, and then you can shoot them and think that you're the good guy. So I'll take some questions, and I really do appreciate your attention in this matter. But let's do a little bit of an old... Oh, I just turned that off. Let's do a little bit of an old-fashioned... sorry, let's turn that back on. My apologies. Hit the wrong X. I'm at complete sixes and sevens. My apologies. I'm at complete sixes and sevens tonight, so I appreciate your patience as I try not to mess things too much up. It's been a rough week. So I think that the video is back. Let me just check that. I think we're back. So let me just double check that. Yes. Okay. So let's get into the truth about. So this is the truth about the alleged shooter. Again, it's not been proven beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law, but this is Tyler Robinson. So Tyler Robinson, a 22-year-old Utah resident identified by authorities as the suspect in the fatal shooting of Charlie Kirk, September 10th, gosh, only 2 days ago, 2025, during a speaking event at Utah Valley University. Kirk, the 31-year-old founder of Turning Point USA, host of a popular podcast, was shot in the neck from about 200 yards away while addressing a crowd of about 3,000 people. He died shortly after at a local hospital. Robinson was arrested yesterday, September 11th, 2025, ending a 33-hour manhunt currently being held without bail at Utah County Jail in Spanish Fork, Utah. So born around 2003, Robinson is from Washington, Utah, a small city near the Arizona border, about 260 miles south of Orem. He lived with his parents, including his father, who was reportedly a 27-year veteran sheriff's deputy. He's a third-year student in the Electrical Apprenticeship Program at Dixie Technical College in St. George, Utah. He attended Utah State University for one semester in 2021, possibly studying engineering, and earned college credits through Utah Tech University while in high school from 2019 to 2021. He was not enrolled at UVU and had no known prior connection to the campus beyond the incident. And there's a video of Tyler, who had a 4.0 GPA in school, achieved topped ACT scores, and was awarded a $32,000 scholarship to Utah State University, which would have covered 4 years of tuition. And there's a video of him on X. I guess it's a home video of him reading the letter. And he's, to me, got this, like, just my personal opinion. I can't diagnose anyone or say to anyone's medical history, but my own personal opinion, he's got this kind of dead-faced SSRI 1,000-yard stare, woo, you know, and in all the videos, like the pictures, and his eyes are dead to me. Now, I don't know if that's prejudice. I don't know if that's ex post facto reasoning. Well, I believe he's a killer, and therefore his eyes look dead. I don't know if I'd looked at that guy, try and put myself outside of that swirl and say, okay, well, if I saw this guy, I didn't know, but there's something wrong. There's something really vacant or not there as a whole. The smile never reaches the eyes, right? I'm not saying he's Mr. Beast. I'm just saying that the smile never reaches the eyes, and that's always gives me kind of the willies, right? I remember when I was directing and producing one of my plays after I left theater school. I directed and produced a play I'd written, and I had a guy who was kind of like that. And he was really, really tough to work with. I ended up having to fire him as an actor because he just couldn't get any emotions to come out of his frame as a whole. So criminal history, the young man, Tyler, has no prior convictions or arrests. He's described by families and officials as a good son and law-abiding. Outside this case, of course, he is not affiliated with the military. As far as his political affiliation goes, Tyler's Utah voter records show him as registered but unaffiliated with any party. Family statements to investigators indicate he'd become more political in recent years. Claims of a Republican registration or Trump support, a debunked rumor of a 2020 Trump donation, appear to stem from a different individual with the same name. There was, of course, a photoshopped picture where they had somebody had draped a support Trump T-shirt over Tyler, the original photo. Of course, that's not what he was wearing. And that, of course, was, I think, seen millions of times, and people will believe it until the end of time. It's like the Find People hoax, right? So there were initial media reports of Antifa or transgender ideology on bullet casings. So these are satirical references from video game culture. And then there are engravings like, "Hey, fascists, catch," like catch a bullet. And notices, bulges, O-O-O-W-O, what's this? Which is that a furry thing? I think that's a furry thing. I don't know much about the furry subculture because I'm bald. No other reason. And then one bullet was engraved with lyrics from the Italian anti-fascist song, Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao. I think that's out of the Spanish Civil War. So, the method. Authorities believe Robinson acted alone, firing from a rooftop on the UVU campus before climbing down and fleeing on foot. The rifle, a semi-automatic, was found wrapped in a towel in a nearby wooded area, with unfired cartridges engraved with these messages. Surveillance video captured the escape, and he drove a gray Dodge Challenger to the scene. And again, I'm no expert in these areas. These are just sort of basic questions that I had. It's like, okay, well, if he's climbing down from the roof, shouldn't he have his rifle with him? Doesn't seem to have his rifle with him. You did see him kind of jump, if you've done parkour kind of stuff. I did sort of this kind of stuff when I was younger. But he lands very heavily and awkwardly and so on. But so I guess they got handprints from the roof, and then they would get his foot imprints from where he landed. I don't know if it's rained. I don't think it has. So, but yeah, I don't, again, if I'm missing something obvious, you know, please, please let me know. But I don't know where the gun is, and that seems confusing to me when he's escaping. Motive. So preliminary evidence points to ideological opposition to Charlie Kirk's views. During a family dinner before the shooting, Robinson mentioned Kirk's university event and expressed disdain for him. Discord messages sent after the shooting from an account named Tyler, shared by a roommate, detailed the plot, including watching the rifle's location post-shooting. No broader conspiracy has been uncovered, though the investigation continues. I was roundly corrected by some and not by others when I pointed out that a 200-yard shot to me would indicate some sort of professional, and people are saying, nah, 10-year-olds can do that, blah, blah, blah. And then other people who were military saying that's actually kind of a tough shot. So the shot required some firearms experience, but was not extraordinarily difficult for a practiced shooter. Robinson family is described by Tyler's high school friend as very hard Republican and gun-loving. Photos from family social media show Tyler posing with guns such as an M2 Browning and a 50 caliber machine gun. So how was he caught? Well, on the evening of September 11th, 24 hours and change ago, Robinson confessed or implied involvement to his father after being confronted about matching FBI-released suspect photos. I'm sure you saw the photos of the guy, skinny guy with a baseball cap and shades and so on. And his father was like, this kind of looks like you, I think. And so then Robinson confessed or implied involvement to his father. The father then contacted a family friend, a clergy member or pastor, who alerted the Washington County Sheriff's Office and the FBI. Robinson, the alleged shooter, reportedly threatened suicide rather than surrender, but was taken into custody peacefully in southwest Utah, wearing clothes matching the shooter's description. The pastor and a family friend, who was also a U.S. Marshals Task Force officer affiliated with the Washington County Sheriff's Office, advised Matt, the father, to keep Tyler in place and then alerted law enforcement. President Donald Trump confirmed the arrest on Fox News, saying, "We have him." Charges. So far, felony counts of aggravated murder, felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily harm, and obstruction of justice. Utah officials, including Governor Spencer Cox, plan to pursue the death penalty. Federal charges may be added. His first court appearance is expected on September 16th, 2025. It's 4 days from now. Is it true? I read somewhere, I don't know if it's true, but is it true that Utah still has death by firing squad? I wonder. Could be. All right. So the FBI raided Robinson's family home on September 12th. That's today. Discord stated that his account showed no evidence of planning violence, with references to the shooting occurring after the fact with a roommate. Some online theories question the lone actor narrative, e.g. citing event security anomalies or backwards rifle scope claims, but officials maintain it's a solo act with no additional arrests expected. There was, of course, also people on X who said, well, this plane left from a close airfield an hour after the shooting and then turned off its GPS locator and its broadcast and blah, blah, blah. Again, who knows, right? I mean, I don't think it's related to this, but that certainly did seem a bit sus. So there's a lot of debate about this. So, of course, Kirk's organization and allies, including President Trump, have mourned him as a key MAGA voice. Vigils calls for honors like lying in state. The investigation remains active, but evidence strongly ties Robinson to the crime. So, let me just pause here. Somebody says, Utah uses firing squads. Yes, the only state that does. It should be done publicly since Charlie died publicly. Interesting. Interesting. All right. Okay, so let us continue on with this. So family statements about Tyler Robinson's political engagement of views primarily come from information shared with investigators, as relayed by Utah Governor Spencer Cox during press conferences. These details were reported across multiple news outlets. In addition to the above details, there are reports of the following. A news report from The Guardian, if accurate, indicates Tyler was moving hard to the left around sophomore year in high school. I think that's grade 10, right? Suspect's high school friend says Robinson was the only leftist in a family of very hard Republicans. Now, let me shock and appall everyone. As per usual, you can check out my Bomb in the Brain series. You can also check out Gene Wars, G-E-N-E Wars. To some degree, political affiliation is genetic. To some degree, political affiliation is genetic. The correlation, of course, is not massively high, but it certainly is there. And they've done this with twin studies. They've done this with a wide variety of genetic analyses and so on. So it certainly is possible that somebody with a bent to be a leftist is born into a family of Republicans. That's a challenge. That is a significant challenge. And I wouldn't immediately blame the parents for the leftism if he has a predisposition towards leftism. And I mean, I hate to be cliched, but patterns are patterns, and we try to recognize them because we want to thrive, survive, and not die. So he was ridiculously skinny, had arms that made David Hogg look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and looked about as low T as you can get. He would, in fact, is so low T that he would have been evicted from an English tea shop. So my guess would be, as a physically weak person, that there's no particular example of sports, and he did not look like he could lift a teacup, let alone throw a football. So you can normally tell people who are engaged or involved with sports because they tend to have a sort of physical robustness to them, a sturdiness to them. And again, I'm just looking at photos. I looked at the photos. I'm like, I can't look at this too long or I'm going to lose my chest here. And my voice is going to get... Anyway, so if he was low T, if he was not physically strong, which he obviously doesn't appear to have been, then he would be more likely to be consensus-based, which means he would be more likely to be susceptible to the propaganda roaming around. And again, this is why, you know, when I came back to X, I'm like, go lift yourself. Like, you don't even know who you are if you don't lift. because you are just a consensus-based life form. And the more you exercise, the more you lift, the more physically strong you get, the more rightward your views tend to go or to get. So that's just a complete aside, but don't necessarily blame the family entirely for like, gosh, if you guys are such robust Republicans, how'd you end up with this leftist kid? If that's what happened, it can happen just, you know, like I've known families where there's nobody in the family who has any musical talent whatsoever. And then you get a kid who can pick up piano like that, who's got perfect pitch, a nice singing voice, and they just play. And it's a scattershot, right? It's a scattershot with genetics. So just remember that as a whole. So in a phone interview on Friday, today, one of Tyler Robinson's high school friends who asked to remain anonymous said that the suspect, but his name is actually, no, I'm just kidding, but said the suspect was, quote, pretty left on everything and was, quote, the only member of his family that was really leftist. The rest of his family was very hard Republican, the friend said. Around sophomore year, that friend said, Robinson became more extreme in his political views and would, quote, always be just ranting and arguing about them. The friend says that they played video games together a lot in high school and noted that the bullet engraving with the arrows was a reference to Helldivers 2. That's a video game, I think it's an online shooter, and according to at least one young person that I know, it's kind of a rage bait because everyone in there is like pro gamers who just snipe you as soon as you spawn or something like that. So he said that the arrows specifically that were on the bullet engravings were in reference to calling in a big bomb that exists in the game called the 500 kilogram. When the friend saw the news on Friday, he said that he was shocked. Quote, I knew he, Robinson, had strong political views, but I never thought it'd even go near that far. The friend said that he had not spoken to Robinson in years, began to drift apart towards the end of high school. Another high school classmate separately told The Guardian that the friend and Robinson were close in school and would play video games. So, as we mentioned during a recent family dinner prior to the incident, Robinson brought up Charlie Kirk's upcoming speaking event at Utah Valley University, expressing very negative views about Charlie Kirk. Now, one of the things that Charlie Kirk was heavily criticized for was that his view, which is biblically consistent with the existence of the soul and the innocence of the fetus, that even the victim of rape must bring the child to term, and was challenged about, well, even if your own kid or whatever it is. And so that was considered to be pretty wild. Now, of course, he has no power to affect that whatsoever. And but that is, of course, the sacrament to the left is the right to kill your own fetus. And so that would, I think, be considered quite radical for a lot of people. So after the shooting, again, I just want to go over this once more, confessed or implied involvement to a family member, goes to the clergy member, who alerts authorities, and that's what happens. A neighbor noted the incident, quote, shocked the crap out of me, and said, I didn't think he would have done this, but did not provide specifics on his politics. There is no publicly available information indicating whether Tyler Robinson was on psychiatric medication, because, of course, for me, at least, when these sorts of shootings occur, because remember, there was this whole thing where we've solved the problem of mental illness with all of these psychotropic drugs and SSRIs and so on. Yet it doesn't seem to have solved it at all. In fact, mental health in many ways is getting worse. So there is no details about that. So several other statements from friends, former classmates, and close associates have emerged in media reports following the arrest today. These accounts, drawn from interviews conducted by outlets like ABC News, The New York Post, and others, paint a picture of Robinson as generally reserved, apolitical in his earlier years, with a noticeable shift towards more vocal political views in recent times. No statements indicate prior violent tendencies, and many express disbelief at the allegations. So a former classmate from Utah State University from 2021, a classmate who knew Robinson during his single semester at Utah State University, as far as I know, there's no explanation as to why he left, at least we've not heard that yet, was stunned to hear of the shooting. This classmate described Robinson as, quote, friendly, but a little more reserved, noting that they, quote, never really heard him talk political. This classmate emphasized that Robinson seemed like an ordinary student focused on his pre-engineering studies with no signs of extremism. So that begs the question, what happened? What happened? How was he radicalized? That's a really, really important question. I mean, I was on the cover of the New York Times for radicalizing a listener of mine into getting a girlfriend, going to church, and getting a job. That was radical, right? I was accused of all kinds of terrible things. And so, I mean, clearly, the media cares about how someone gets radicalized. And I don't know that they'll be quite as interested in this one for sort of obvious reasons. So high school acquaintance from Pineview High School, class of 2021, said Robinson was, quote, quiet and kept to himself during high school, but was known as a good kid who earned college credits through dual enrollment at Utah Tech University. They added that he wasn't overtly political back then, describing him as someone who got along with everyone and showed no red flags. This person who knew him back then was, quote, in complete shock, saying, quote, he was the last person I think would do something like this. Yeah, someone who got along with everyone, that indicates to me personality absence. And, you know, the people who feel that they don't have much of a defined personality, much of a strong sense of self, they are kind of easily impressionable. You know, like if you've ever worked with clay, right? Clay, when it's kind of soft, doesn't really have an identity, but you can put your identity on it. When the clay is hardened, you can't change it after that without breaking it, right? So, you know, when it's kind of quiet, reserved, got along with everyone, kind of nondescript, you know, didn't really stand out, didn't really know who he was, that's somebody who is kind of, to me, lacking some sort of core identity or being or presence. And that, to me, is someone who's thirsting for a cause, thirsting for an identity, thirsting for a purpose. And that's somebody who probably is a little bit easier to impress or radicalize in this kind of way. So a youth pastor close to the Robinson family who assisted in the arrest after Robinson's father contacted him told CBS News that Robinson had been, quote, struggling with his beliefs in recent years, particularly after exposure to online communities. The pastor described him as, quote, a good young man from a strong family who had, quote, lost his way politically but was not inherently hateful until recently. He emphasized the family's role in turning him in, saying, quote, they did what was right, even though it broke their hearts. Whew. That's rough, man. And, you know, I mean, of course, the father, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer. What do I know about Utah law? But I would imagine that there would be some legal exposure to being an accomplice or a participant in somehow, if you knew all of this stuff but didn't turn him in, that could get you in some sort of trouble as well. That was a $100,000 reward, but of course, the father is not taking it, as far as I can understand. But yeah, imagine making that call, knowing that your state has the death penalty. That's rough. That's rough. There's no publicly available information or reports indicating that Tyler Robinson was bullied in school. There's no public information about how Matt Robinson and his wife Amber Jones Robinson disciplined Tyler Robinson. There is some indication or some reports that, or some Facebook posts, I think it was, or some online social media posts, which I think the mom said, I can't decide if I love him or want to kill him on a daily basis or something like that. I don't know if that's frustration. I don't know if that means anything, but we'll sort of find out as time goes forward. A spiteful mutant. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I disagree that politics is genetic. My mother is like Joy Behar Light, complete opposite of me and her father. I don't know what that means. Oh, was his mom's profession? From what I've read, and I'm, again, this is all very tentative stuff, but I think his mother is a social worker. Social workers, particularly female social workers, are notoriously leftist. But again, we don't have any particular confirmation of that. So again, whether this is true or not is all speculation. No particular proof. Yeah, somebody says, I've never liked people who get on with everyone. You can never trust them as their opinions depend on who is in the room with them. Okay, so that's the alleged shooter. And now the question is, why was Charlie Kirk shot? So people say it's about politics, but politics has always been around. Why do people resort to violence in the realm of politics? Well, let's play this out, right? So let's say that Charlie Kirk became very powerful in the realm, he already was, but even more powerful in the realm of politics. And let's say that as the result of Charlie Kirk's work, Charlie Kirk becomes vice president, he becomes president. And let's say he builds enough of a heap in a sort of alternate universe timeline where he wasn't brutally executed, that he gets his way and the borders are secure and government shrinks by, I'm just guessing here, I don't know what he would want, 75%, whatever, 80%, 60%. The welfare state is replaced by private charity. There's more homeschooling, less government education. And I don't know what his policies were as a whole, but this is sort of general small government stuff, right? Well, what that means, of course, is that trillions of dollars aren't going to people anymore. Charlie Kirk was not a big fan of lots of foreign wars and engagements and interventions. Trillions of dollars aren't going into the military-industrial complex over time. Let's say he shrank the welfare state. Trillions of dollars not going to the poor. Let's say that he was able to give people a tax credit so that they could homeschool and not have to fund government schools. Then, you know, tens of millions of kids are dumped out of government schools. You know, thousands of teachers lose their jobs and you name it, right? So if Charlie Kirk got his way, tens of millions of people are not getting their free shit anymore. People kill for $50. Junkies, right? People want their free stuff. People want their free stuff. And if you stand between the free stuff addict and his or her free stuff, you get an addict-sized hole where your midriff should be. So people want their free stuff. And of course, there's all these questions about tolerance. We're going to be a more tolerant society. It's like, no. A statist society like America with a government that large is not tolerant. By definition, it can't be tolerant. So let's say that you think that the welfare state is not the way to help poor, to help the poor, and you'd rather private charity or getting personally involved or something like that. Too bad. You pay or you go to jail. It's not tolerant. It's a one way to do it. Government welfare doesn't work. It's terrible for the poor. It doesn't matter. Let's say you would rather have a healthcare system where people get paid to prevent illness rather than just endlessly treat and cure it, which is the exact wrong incentives that you'd want for a healthcare system. Nope, too bad. You got to pay the taxes. You can't have an alternate solution. Let's say that you don't think that the government is very good at educating children, particularly if you have a young boy. Too bad. You got to pay for it anyway. There's no tolerance. When people go directly to the government to solve every conceivable problem, they are setting up a situation of coercive intolerance that is pretty hard to find a second to. Any problem you have, run to the government, pass a law, throw people in jail who disagree, who disobey, who think they want to do something different. Can't have that. Can't have that. Government is an agency of coercion. It's called fiat currency. Fiat means by coercive decree. Do you think that maybe you shouldn't have to spend, you know, 8+ years and then a bunch of 80-hour work weeks to become a doctor? Nope, can't practice medicine. Can't do it without that government piece of paper. I mean, honestly, it goes on and on. And it's funny because you have here, I'm not criticizing the family, I'm just sort of pointing out that you have people who are Republicans and they both work for the government. Dad's a, I think the dad now runs a private company, but with a 27-year veteran means he worked for the government for 27 years, enforcing laws that I'm sure were not super constitutional, that he may not have agreed with, but he'll get paid and do it anyway. The mother's a social worker, that's government. So, you know, it's kind of tough to say, well, but small government people, they all work for the government. Maybe you don't believe that the richest generation in the history of the planet, the boomers, should jugular-like attach themselves like a bunch of wrinkled vampire bats to the necks of the young and bleed them dry for their retirement benefits. Maybe you don't think that. Too bad! You can't tolerate that. Can't tolerate any other possibilities. You got to pay for it or you go to jail. And if you resist, well, laws, all laws about you comply. And if you don't comply, they escalate until you comply or die. That's just the fact. That's just the fact. That's just the reality. So why was he killed? Because people want their free stuff, and free market people interfere with free stuff, and people are addicted. And I say this in the most profound way that I can. People are addicted to free stuff. Of course, I know it's not free. Nothing's free. I get all of that. But people are addicted to free stuff. And I'm not just talking the poor, the rich as well. I mean, traditionally, society has been a few people at the top and then a whole bunch of people at the bottom. Marxism, of course, saw the rising bourgeoisie, the middle class, and viewed them as the particular enemy. And, of course, Marx predicted that with the rise of capitalism, the bourgeoisie, the middle class, was going to vanish and disappear. But the middle class is the mark of a healthy society, having a middle class. Because the middle class are not so rich that they have the ear of the government and not so poor that they get a bunch of government benefits. So they are the ballast that tries to keep government from growing. This is why the leftists hate the middle class more than anything, because the leftists can co-opt the wealthy. And they can buy the allegiance of the poor with free stuff. But the middle class, you know, this is one of the reasons why under COVID, the big box stores, the big corporate stores were allowed to function and the poor were given free checks. But the self-owned middle class small businesses, bam, smashed into atoms. Smashed into atoms. The traditional enemy of larger and larger government are Christians and small business owners, the bourgeoisie, the middle class, and so on. Those rich enough to have to be forced to fund everything. Because, I mean, the wealthy can, you know, buy their politicians and get preferential legislation, and you know, they got the ear of whoever they need to, because they can donate a massive amount. And then the poor are just, you know, bread and circuses. You just give them a bunch of free entertainment and free money, and they're fine. But the middle class, the bourgeoisie, the kulaks, what they were called, right? They are the ones who traditionally want smaller and smaller government. The rich, of course, they don't mind regulatory overload because they can afford, you know, entire floors of regulatory lawyers to make sure that. But the red tape and the regulations really bury the small to medium businesses. And so additional complexity in the realm of law and regulations, obviously the regulations growing like crazy in Western countries. The rich are fine with that. The big corporations are fine with that. They can often get exemptions and they can afford the lawyers to try and get compliance. And of course, if you are a big corporation and you're on the left, then you'll be forgiven a lot of transgressions. If you're not, probably not, right? Either big or on the left. So yeah, people, they want their free stuff. They want the power. And if you are someone like Charlie Kirk, who is really focusing on reducing the size and power of the government, Christians want smaller government as a whole in the West because you need to have free will in order to be virtuous. And if you are coerced into doing something, right, then it's not a virtue, right? This is why Christians tend to oppose the welfare state, because it's coerced virtues. And you if you force someone to be good, they're not good. And so because Christians want to pursue virtue, they resist government power as a barrier to freely chosen virtues. So Charlie Kirk and people like him represent the withdrawal of the most dangerous drug in the world, which is fiat currency, deficits, debt, unfunded liabilities, all of that murky extract from the future ghost violence that has the government appear to be providing value because they print money, right? They print money and they appear to be providing value. And the bill comes later, and particularly towards the poor. Like, you know, Marx was supposed to be this big defender of the workers, but he never really talked about inflation, even though he studied the French Revolution extensively, which was a huge and horrible inflation. I got a whole show about this. So he didn't care. He didn't care. So it remains to be seen who radicalized this young man. I wouldn't necessarily put it on the parents to have be able to solve this kind of stuff. I don't know. I mean, we're probably not. People don't even think to ask about this kind of stuff in general. The media certainly doesn't as a whole. So I don't know that we'll find out much about the parenting or what was done. But if this kid was spiraling into murderous political rage, who was fueling it? Who was engaging it? Who was egging him on, if anyone? It's hard to imagine. You know, this is the, you know, the toaster sex problem. I'll just go over it briefly. I have a demonstration toaster here. No, I don't. But so the toaster sex problem is, you know, some guy wakes up and he's like, you know, that toaster looks really sexy in this light, in the pink dawn light. It looks really hot. Maybe I should have sex with the toaster. And you're like, oh, God, that's crazy, right? And then you sort of put the idea aside as like, that's nuts, right? And that's how it used to be. And eventually you just stop thinking about the sexiness of that toaster over there. But the problem is now you can go on, you know, r/sex with toasters, and maybe there's only 500 people on the entire planet who want to have sex with their toasters, but they're all there. And then you're like, instead of being like, well, that's crazy. That's drive the nutty idea, right? Instead of doing that, you go on, log on every day. All these people, oh, yeah, look at this sexy toaster. This guy's really sexy. Hey, you know, people just don't understand us. And, you know, we're blah, 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 right? And then you're trapped in sex with toasters land, and you never denormalize it. Because your brain doesn't know that there's only 500 people on the whole planet. Your brain is like, well, we're surrounded by people who want to have sex with toasters. Listen, I appreciate everyone who's coming by tonight. Thank you for dropping by freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I really would appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate. You can go to freedomain.com/books for a great series of books. I'm currently working on my new novel. Finished the second draft, just working on the end. And I really do appreciate everyone calling in tonight, and have yourselves a wonderful night, Sunday morning, 11 a.m. for donors. You can go to fdrurl.com/locals to sign up for that. Lots of love, my friends. Have a beautiful night. I appreciate your participation, and we'll talk soon. Bye.